listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 138 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and The Bolt. Hey guys, how you doing?
Good. Hello.
I survived a flash flood a couple nights ago, so I'm happy to still be amongst us.
Oh dear. Okay.
Good.
What happened?
Well, it wasn't all that dramatic, actually. I'm overselling it. We just had crazy rain, and the house where that I'm renting is sort of in the valley of this street, and so there was just a big lake in our front yard.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
Should write a song about it.
Front yard flood.
Well, it's been a busy week here at CD Baby. We were featured in the New York Times, which was very cool and something that we had been working on for a long time, and it was finally happened this week. So that was a nice thing to have happen.
We even managed to get a swear word into the New York Times.
Really?
A couple of them.
Are you referring to the album cover that was?
Yeah, actually. Well, if you look at the chalkboard where I am writing on so awkwardly because they told me to do it, the picture of me right on the chalkboard, there's another swear word.
Oh, there's a swear word on the chalkboard. They took a picture of Kevin in the cafetorium here, and then they also took a picture in the warehouse, and there's a album that's being featured that has a swear word on it. So the New York Times... is showing our true colors, I think.
Well, in their defense, the album cover, it takes a while for you to notice that that's what it even says. So
It didn't take a while for Bolton to notice it.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either until I've tried to find the band. I thought, hey, you know, the band that's being featured there might like to know that they're in the New York Times. Let me look it up. And then I was looking really closely. Is that say what I think it says? So anyway, yeah, so that was cool. It was a very nice write-up. If you haven't read it, check it out. It's online. Just search New York Times and CD Baby. And it was cool because I thought they kind of captured the essence of who we are and pointing to where we're headed. And it was a nice piece. So anything else going on with you guys briefly before we jump into all the good stuff?
I was at the studio last night until midnight recording. Been working on an album now for, I don't know, 6 months or so, but, it's coming along. We're doing backup vocals now, so I'm excited to, start hearing some final mixes soon.
Cool. And, go ahead.
I was supposed to drive down to Portsmouth, New Hampshire on the same night as this crazy flooding to play a radio show. And, pretty much about 10 minutes before I was going to leave, the woman that is the host called and said it was off because another guy canceled and we'd reschedule. But it reminded me of a time that I once drove from Portland, Oregon to San Francisco to play a gig, only to be told that the gig wasn't have music, that they didn't have music anymore in that club. So, yeah, make the phone call before you leave.
Oh, nobody, my gosh.
Make sure they're still in business. They still like you. They still want you to come that night.
Nobody bothered to tell all the musicians they had booked for, you know, like 6 months. That.
Yeah, right.
So, well, Small Town Poets, we've started a new album, and that's been exciting. So I've been out in Atlanta recording, been recording at home, and we're about to launch a Pledge Music campaign. So you'll probably hear updates about that on the podcast, and it's not live yet, but by the time you hear this podcast, it might be. It's we're just pledgemusic.com/smalltownpoets. But boy, doing these campaigns is an adventure to say the least. It's a lot of work.
I'm still thinking of doing one. And then every time I hear someone say something like that, I back up about a month.
Well, I really like the tools that Pledge Music has to offer. In the those of you who've been listening to the podcast for a long time know that I did one with a band here in Portland that I'm in called Hello Morning, and we used Rocket Hub. But Pledge Music, we've been doing some things with them here at CD Baby, and I've gotten to know Benji, who is the CEO there, and he's has me drinking the Kool-Aid of Pledge Music. So we'll see how it goes. So
cool.
All right, well, we got lots of good stuff to talk about today. We've got some news. We have our discussion topic for the episode, which was provided by several listeners who were asking about email and if email is still even worth pursuing or if it's important, or they keep hearing that it's important. So we'll be talking about that. And then we'll round it all out with some feedback from you, the listeners. So let's get to the news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, there's a new Viacom study out in which they ask music fans, before you purchase a song, what do you do? 91% of folks said they listen to the track on YouTube. The other two top ranking results coming in the mid 80% level were listen to other songs by the artist and just make sure they really like it. So kind of a quick, interesting little survey that Viacom, who's always trying to keep tabs on the music buying community because they have properties like MTV and such. So YouTube, first place they go.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that artists always have to remember too is that music is a very unique product that you do have to listen to first before you decide whether you're going to buy it. You know, it's very different from, like, say, a sandwich, which you wouldn't eat first before you buy it. You wouldn't eat the sandwich to be like, oh yeah, this is a good sandwich, like, I think I'll buy it. Music, like, for whatever reason, like, we want to hear it, we want to make a connection with it before we buy it.
Yeah, obviously on this survey, if those of you adding up percentages, people could pick multiple things, or just they probably said, what are some of the first things you do? And they just let people answer however many times they wanted to. The YouTube thing was very interesting because a lot of people do go straight to YouTube. And if you don't have your tracks on YouTube, you should put them there. But the one thing that I thought was interesting, which probably didn't get much play in this survey, was the fact that people listen to other songs by the artist. And to me, this is a key point because I do this exact same thing. And it's one of the main reasons why I say releasing albums is still important. Because even if you have a hit song or one main song that people seem to be liking, they're still using the catalog of music around it to judge whether or not they like you or not. If it's just one song, they're like, it's just one song, I don't want to invest necessarily in this one song. But if they're like, man, I really like the vibe of this band and I like this song, they might buy it. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose there's also, if for some reason you're not able to hear the whole song before you buy it, listening to some of their other songs might be helpful in getting an idea.
Exactly.
I'm trying to remember back, and if there was ever a time where I heard a song by an artist I'd never heard of before, loved it so much that I wanted to buy it without that sort of surrounding context.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. I don't think I ever have.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Moving on. With the help of Bandpage, you can now easily sell your band merch and experiences on Spotify. Whether you want to sell traditional merch items like band posters, t-shirts, and vinyl records, or memorable experiences such as private online concerts, backstage access to gigs, or guided tours of your recording studio, Bandpage will help you get the word out to your fans by displaying those offers on your Spotify artist page. The new Bandpage integration is completely free to artists. You can get your merch offers onto Spotify with a free Bandpage account, and Spotify doesn't take any fees or commission. You also don't need to change how you currently sell merchandise. You can link your existing online store, or if you don't have one, you can create a Bandpage store. So this was an interesting announcement. I know Topspin had done some integration with Spotify, and I have yet to see anybody with that integration in place. Yeah. And this is one of those things. It sounds cool. I'll be curious to see if anyone uses it and if it does become a viable place to sell merch. They say they don't take a commission, but that, believe me, will happen. The one thing though that
I know they said Spotify doesn't take a commission, but Bandpage does, right?
They're not on these sales. Any sale through Spotify, they're not taking a commission at this time just because they want adoption. But the thing you got to know is eventually they will, because they've got to make money. But Also, I'm kind of curious to see if something like this does get mass adoption from Spotify, what it's like for the customer experience for the music fan who's on Spotify, kind of assumes they're buying from Spotify, but then it's the transactions happen at Bandpage, the artist is fulfilling the order. I'm just curious to see if the customer is going to feel like they were kind of left out to dry, because people are used to ordering stuff on Amazon, having customer service, getting it fast. So,
I mean, to speak to Amazon, I mean, Amazon actually does use private sellers. So sometimes when you order through Amazon, you are ordering through, you know, someone else. So if they do it as well as Amazon does, maybe it could be fine.
Yeah. And it's just one of those things where, you know, artists need to understand that if you are signing up to do this, you are saying that you will fulfill the merchandise. And
if you go on tour for 2 months, then leave someone at home to ship stuff out for you.
Yeah, exactly. So if anyone's using it, send us a link. I'd love to see a profile set up with this. I don't have any merch right now to link any of our profiles, but if somebody out there does, please send us a link. You can just put it in the comment section for this episode, and we'll check it out. All right, finally, the big news, even bigger than our New York Times feature this week here at CD Baby. We officially launched our new music player store widget, and it has all the features you need and none you don't. You can create custom playlists, embed it anywhere on the web. Your fans can embed it. You can take full stream clips, 30-second clips. It's your choice. Unlimited players, unlimited combinations. It's something we're really excited about, and it's we're hoping it's something that helps artists get their music out there and really sell a lot of music.
And it's compatible on mobile devices, unlike our last player.
That's right. Yeah, it is really a cool thing. It's something that, you know, behind the scenes, there's been things, you know, a little look into CD Baby. This is what everybody, you won't this necessarily hear anywhere else. Yeah. There's been some things that we've created that when we launched, we thought, well, that's not quite there, or we'll come back to that and make it better. This one, I'm really proud of. We put a lot of effort into it. It's designed based off of feedback from artists about what was in the marketplace and what was missing. One of the key things is that you can create, you know, a limited number of players. It's not just based off of creating a player based off your album. Like on Bandcamp, you know, I've used Bandcamp players, and the bummer is you can only create a player for your album. You have to create a new player for every album. This, you can mix and match your songs. It looks great. You can choose full-length streams or 30-second clips, which is feedback we heard from a lot of artists that they wanted to only give away clips. Yeah, so it's just really cool. We're excited about it, and you should check it out and let us know what you think.
Yeah, labels can mix and match artists too, not just just albums and songs, but
yeah, that's the cool thing too. If you're a label, you can create players for each of your artists to feature on their website, so it just has the relevant stuff. And it's cool, there's a mini player that's perfect for sending to the press to embed in any album review that they do of your music. You could put one song in there, you could put the whole album. Just lots of cool options and ways for artists to use this strategically, which just makes me happy both as a CD Baby employee and as an artist. So it's already up on the Small Town Poets site at smalltownpoets.tv. And do you have one as well? You've got one up there, Robley, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Chris. If you go to chrisrobley.com and click music, you will see my one that's both the player and the full page music store.
Yeah, that's the other cool thing. It has four different sizes. So there's one where it's a full page kind of music store, and that's what Chris has. And then the one that I'm using is just kind of a sidebar player. And then there's the mini player, and then there's another version of kind of the sidebar player. So yeah, check that out. It's exciting, and we hope it helps artists sell a bunch of music. Well, that's all the news items I've got. Why don't we move right on into the discussion for today about email.
Email marketing, that is.
Email marketing, not just email, email marketing.
Yeah. Spoiler alert would be, it matters.
Yeah, yeah. So the question that was posed to us to discuss on the podcast was to discuss whether or not email matters. We're in a world of social media. Everyone's interacting on social, but does it still matter that I have an email list? Should I bother with it? Should I be sending to these folks? The Bolt has some, I think you had some info for us on the subject.
Well, yeah, I had some topics to cover. I think that one of the biggest misconceptions is that social media is a replacement for email as a way to connect with your fans. And we've seen a lot of examples of what a big mistake that can be. One of the big changes in the music industry, digital communication, a number of years ago is when MySpace tanked and everyone got out of MySpace, and suddenly artists were left with, you know, these MySpace accounts where they could no longer reach their fans because their fans were no longer logging into MySpace. And that doesn't happen with email. You know, people don't stop checking their email, but they might stop logging into the social network that you're trying to reach them on. So you don't have that sort of guarantee of connectivity that you do with email. And a lot of times, you know, we've seen these updates with Facebook where, you know, only a very small percentage, like less than 10% of people are seeing your updates. You're going to be able to reach your audience much better by sending an email than you are than creating a Facebook post or a Twitter tweet or anything like that. You're going to reach a much larger number of people.
Yeah, a lot of talk has been happening around, you know, Facebook lately and their algorithms that show people your posts and whether or not they show your posts. The nice thing about email, just from a basic level, is that there's nobody deciding whether or not your email is going to get in the inbox. Sure, there's spam filters and things like that, but we're talking about there's no one making judgments about your content and whether or not it should be shown to the people that are looking at your page, because that's what's happening with Facebook. I had actually an interesting little story about an email I just sent that I can give you a comparison of the two platforms. Small Town Poets, we're, like I said, we're working on a new album, so we're kind of getting our list all kind of cleaned up, and we have about 5,000 or so people who like us on Facebook. And then there's our email list was about 5,000 folks. We've been posting a ton on Facebook, just trying to get the engagement back up because we've been on a bit of a hiatus. And we also sent out an email, and the email got opened by about 50% of the people. But if you know open rates for email, that's massive. Normally they're around 20% or 15% is really good. But so 50% of the people opened the email. Out of all the posting that we've been doing on Facebook, the average post, even one that gets tons of comments and likes, still only gets seen by, you know, a couple hundred people. And so there's a prime example about how a message on email actually was seen by most of the folks, where on Facebook, only a handful of those saw it.
It kind of comes down to like a quality over quantity sort of thing, which is one of the benefits of email. Those people have already invested enough to give you this sort of private information and access to their inbox. And so you know those they're primed to hear from you, as opposed to like a Facebook fan, which kind of they might casually like you. And I think the difference of the people who are waiting to hear from you on both those platforms are very different.
Yeah, one's passive and one is people, like you said, it's personal, it's your inbox. People don't like changing their email address constantly, and people think long and hard before they delete an email address, where people I see deleting, you know, Twitter accounts or Facebook accounts just willy-nilly. They'll have a bad weekend and they'll delete their Facebook account. So,
and then they'll be back a month later.
Yeah, going, why did I do that? So to me, that's a big difference.
I was just going to say, there's a real difference in the way that communication is actually perceived as well. If I were to create like a quick metaphor, I'd say that like posting on social media is kind of like waving a sign around in a real crowded room. It's not very personal. An email is much more like walking up to someone, tapping them on the shoulder, and giving them a message. It feels like someone is actually personally addressing you, whereas a Facebook or a Twitter post feels like just kind of buckshot into the wild. You know, people are throwing out messages all the time. Then it's not that personalized.
Sure. And if you get someone to open an email, it's not, you know, it's like, it's not a totally immersive experience, like as if they were reading a book or something. But for those few seconds or that minute that they're reading your email, it's between you and them. Whereas on Facebook, right above your post and right below your post in their newsfeed is stuff going on by other people. So there's a real, you know, attention span, distractible quality to the social media communications.
Yeah, right, there's so many messages just coming constantly. I mean, you imagine if your email box was just constantly getting filled up as you watched it.
That's every day here at work for me.
I feel like that's work.
It's a high level of stress for me watching that number go up and up. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we could point to a lot of studies online. If you want to read some marketing blogs, they tend to be a bit dry when they start talking about email and how effective they are. But there's some great numbers out there you could look up and you see that, yeah, it is worthwhile for you to be building an email list and communicating that way. I think you guys brought up several good points, especially the fact of like having their undivided attention more so than social media. I mean, they could still be on their phone on the subway, on the way to work, looking at just stuff, and your email is one of them. But it's still, for that moment, it gives you the platform to kind of have undivided attention and create more of your story and build more of your story into it. I know that we've got some best practices or some things artists should be doing in regards to email. Do you have that list?
I could start with one that I just was reminded of when you were saying you get their undivided attention. And even if you only have their undivided attention for the 2 seconds they're reading your subject line, that's a really good place to start. Make sure the subject line or the headlines that you put in your email are really captivating, because probably a large portion of your readers are never, that's all they're going to see.
Yeah, that's a good point, because with, especially, I don't know how it is on other phones. I have an iPhone, but I'm sure all of them are pretty similar, where you see the subject line and maybe the first sentence, and you're just kind of scrolling through your inbox. And a lot of times with emails, especially emails that are like, you know, from companies that I want to be on their list, but I'm not necessarily dying to read everything they see me, I kind of judge whether or not I'm interested based on that subject line and the first sentence I can see. And if I'm not interested, I'll just delete it.
Yeah, take the time that you spend like thinking of a subject line and times that by 10. You know, you could spend as much time working on your subject line as you do the body of your email. I mean, it's really important. You know, write down 10 or 20 ideas and pick the best one, or test it out on your friends, see which one seems most compelling.
Yeah, and I cannot stress enough with email and just having been working on pulling everything together for the Pledge Music campaign that we're about to launch for Small Town Poets, I cannot stress enough the idea of artists infusing their communication, especially email, with good story. And by that, I mean, like, you know, it's not like, don't put update in the subject line. You all are far more creative than that.
Band update. Erase that from your vocabulary.
This is not, I'm not sitting around going, you know, sometimes I see a band, it's like, you know, somebody I'm a huge fan of, if they said, you know, like U2 News, I might look at that. But, you know, get creative. You're telling a story. You want people to be interested in who you are, what you're doing, and your music. And that's so important with email, and email's a great platform to enhance your story.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's something that seems like super simple, you just need to tell your fans about a show that's coming up. You know, instead of going like show on April 19th, try you know, like there's something exciting happening on April 19th you won't want to miss, or you know, April 19th is an important day for our band, or, you know, like, you could throw in the date, but you could also create a little bit of story or a little bit of intrigue. Something special is going to happen on April the 19th. You won't believe the song that we're going to cover on April 19th when our show, you know, when we play, or you won't believe the opening band or whatever, you know, just create a little mystery, a little bit of story around the event.
I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious why you kept saying April 19th. is that a landmark
show booked out a year from now?
I don't know. It just popped into my head.
I was thinking of, you know, you kept saying April 19th in your show, and there's also a way you can involve your email audience and maybe get their feedback and say, you know, what color pants should I wear at that show? Or, you know, that's an absurd example, but get them invested in feeling like they're almost creating the show with you in some way.
Yeah. So what other best practices do you have on your list there, Chris, for email?
One thing I had on my list was to, I guess there's different schools of thought on this, but to keep it short and concise and, you know, preferably on a single topic or news item. And if you focus really on one item, it gives, and you have a couple things to write about, save it and, you know, follow up the next week with another email or, you know, 2 weeks later or whatever. But people just don't have the attention spans to go through a long, like, multi-paragraph email most of the time unless they're obsessed with your band. So,
yeah, email does not have to be this gigantic dissertation of everything that you've been doing lately. They can be short messages. In fact, some of those feel more authentic and genuine when you know, using a service, email service provider that allows you to drop in their name and just say, you know, if I said, hey, Chris, I just wanted to let you know that we're doing this and we'd love to see you there. If you have any questions, you know, here's some links. Sometimes that's just as good. And, you know, it doesn't need to be this enormous, you know, colorful story, but, you know, it's just keeping it, making sure you at least engage on that platform. Because I know for me, a lot of times email, I go, I got to mess with the layout. I got to figure out what the banner image is and all this garbage that I don't want to mess with. I just want to send something out. And so for me, I know that can be a hang up and I just need to go, I don't need to do that. Just send a message.
I had more at Bolton. You got any tips? Should we
just keep rolling?
All right. I'd said, you know, if you have multiple news items, save them up and send multiple emails over the course of a few weeks or a month, which brings up, you should really look at analytics for your emails and figure out the ideal frequency. You know, maybe if you send an email every week, maybe you're losing people because they don't want to be contacted that often. But, you know, maybe every couple months isn't enough. So if you look at your numbers and the stats, and you can eventually kind of fine tune it and say, all right, well, from now on, I'm going to have a monthly email or a seasonal email or whatever's best for you. But I think it's really important to pay attention to the numbers.
Yeah. 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 You gotta kind of follow up, and you don't want to hit people up too often. But if, you know, you can kind of judge most of the tools that are out there with email, they kind of give you some numbers on, and you can kind of judge what's going on. And if people are getting irritated, or they might email you and say, stop emailing so much.
Yeah.
One tip I had, you know, if you're somebody who hasn't used your email list in a long time, and this was a situation we were also in, we hadn't sent anything out in a while. As you start communicating again on email, it's not a bad idea to just send out an email that's kind of an email to just sort of say we're back without going, hey, we're back, but just an email that, you know, if you haven't emailed your list in 6 months, don't make the next email the most important thing you need to tell them. Send one out before then that's just kind of like a re-engagement. Hey, you're on this list. This is where we update you, and we've got some stuff coming. So at least it's kind of like you can, you know, prepare them to be paying attention.
Conditioning.
Yes, that's right. Because yeah, it's real easy to go, hey, we haven't sent an email out we've got our album release show. It was a year since we sent an email to this list. Let's just do the big album release show announcement. And it's like out of the blue, you haven't talked to somebody in forever. The first thing you want to tell them is, you know, the most important thing, you know, just get the dialogue going, get comfortable with each other again.
I mean, otherwise it might seem just a little bit one-sided and salesy, like, yeah, hey, I only holler at you when I really need you to.
Exactly.
You know, we haven't mentioned what I think is probably the most powerful music marketing tool for musicians, the email capture form.
Yes.
I think that I really think that email marketing is probably, you know, the most powerful form of digital marketing for musicians, and having that email capture sign up on your website being just unquestionably one of the most important things you can do as a musician. And I think that making sure that that form is optimized so that people are actually converting and signing up to your email list is super important.
Yeah, everybody take a moment right now, hit pause on the podcast, go to your website and make sure that you have an email capture form on there. If you use HostBaby to provide your website, you will have those tools built into your website. Little right. HostBaby plug there.
And so how do you guys feel about, along with that email capture, the reciprocating, giving a MP3 or a PDF or something in return? Do you feel like that's essential, wise, unnecessary?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's, the way that you make fans, that you turn people into from casual listeners into fans, is by being generous and giving to them. And what they give to you in reciprocation is their fandom. And I think the way to start that relationship is by giving away a free track, or giving away a free t-shirt, or giving some of your own time in the form of an email or communication. Like, you have to give to your audience to create fans. And I think to start doing that at the very beginning of the relationship, when you have an email form that immediately gives them something in return, is the best way to start out that.
And then, God forbid they're not a fan after all of this, then you need to make sure you have a quick unsubscribe button at the bottom.
Right.
But yeah, that is a good point, because please don't get a bunch of email lists and email names from, you know, however you get them, load them into Gmail and send to all your fans. You will get so many people angry. Don't use, if you're using just regular, your personal email, it's going to display everybody's names to everyone. And it's just not cool. And that's spam, and it's illegal.
Yeah. Even if you're smart and you use the BCC and CC fields so that you're not sharing everyone's email address, anytime you got more than like 20 email addresses in there, Google's going to flag it, and it's probably not going to get delivered to most of your audience. So even if you've had some success with doing your email this way, you're going to have a lot more success using an actual email marketing program. You're going to get much better deliverability, and people will not get PO'd at you because they can't unsubscribe.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's something that it's important, because if you're using a tool to build your list, Noisetrade's a great site. That's what I've used many times to start building an email list. You give away a track or an album in exchange for an email, and that's what the whole site is about. It's a great way to build a list, but a lot of those folks are going to want to jump off the list pretty quick. And it's funny, people are funny with their inboxes. Some people are very precious with their inbox, and it's like, how dare you email me, even though they gave me an email address. And other people are just going to be like, you know what, I don't want to receive these. I'm perfectly fine just listening to the free MP3 I got, and I'm going to unsubscribe. So that is important that you allow for people to do that and understand that that's going to happen, and don't get offended or freak out because some people unsubscribe from your list. That's just how it is.
And don't write them. Don't write them a nasty email.
Yeah, don't respond. Actually, what's wrong with you?
I've known people that have done that. I'm like, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
But Another thing we haven't talked about, I don't think, is building this email list in the real world. You know, have a sign-up sheet at your shows, or have an iPad set up that can take things and give them a free sticker or a pin or a discount on your CDs at your merch booth or something like that.
Yeah, I will say that I recommend the paper version and not doing the iPad for a couple reasons. One, you don't want someone to steal your iPad, which you got to have somebody on there. Two, only one person can use the iPad at a time. And three, for the time being, it's still easier for a human being to pick up a pen and write than pick up an iPad and start messing with an interface. I've seen it happen, just go horribly wrong at a conference where CD Baby had a table and we had some stuff where people could like type in their email address as opposed to the pen and paper, where that went super fast, got way more names, especially if you're thinking about, hey, I just played a show and everybody's going to come up to the merch table all at once. They're not going to wait 20 minutes to stand around to get access to the iPad where they can give their name. But if you've got a couple paper lists, that's super easy for them to write down. Someone will have to go back on the back end and enter that in. And depending on the kind of venues you play, and people might be a little bit tipsy at the end of your show, sometimes it's a challenge to understand what they wrote. But at the end, you're going to get more names than just by using an iPad that only allows one person at a time to do anything.
I was going to say, I always, if I can, you know, it's not like at my shows, I'm like swamped afterwards. So I usually can have a one-on-one conversation. But I look at their email that they've written down and kind of read it back to them to make sure I've got it right. Because once I go home, it's like their handwriting is a mystery.
Yep, yep.
I was going to say, I really love the idea of offering a discount on merch or your album for people who sign up to the list. I hadn't really thought about that before, but be like, oh yeah, sign up to the email list and you get $2 off the album or $2 off a t-shirt or whatever. Seems like a pretty cool incentive. I bet a lot of people would do it.
And they'd probably feel guilty for giving you a fake email address for that.
I was just thinking, I'd just give a fake one.
It's people like
really,
you.
I wouldn't feel guilty.
People like you.
No, that's not true, because if I wanted their CD, then I would actually want to hear from them. So,
all right. Any other best practices before we close out the conversation?
Well, one thing I was going to say about email is that once you've built up a list, especially if you've been on tour, one of the really cool advantages is being able to segment your list and send just to a certain city or town when you're coming through. I know that, you know, some social media sites have some, you know, geo-targeting options and stuff, but I think that with an email list, being able to tell, you know, that certain group of fans, especially the exact same fans that went and saw you last time and signed up to your email address, that you're going to be in town again, is a big advantage.
Yeah, that's a good point. With email, it's far easier to just message the folks that need your message, because with social media, that is one of the big irritating things bands do constantly, is they message everybody about a show. And, you know, in the main feed, that's fine. You know, hey, we're playing tonight. Yeah, your feed is part of, you know, you, wherever you're at that moment. But it's, you know, using things like Facebook events where they invite everybody that they know who's spread out all over the country to a show they have in LA. I'm like, that is not helpful, and I don't want to see that. And the more you do that, the more I'm going to tune you out. So with email, it is far easier to just email the folks that need to get your message.
It brings up a question I have, though. In order for you to get there, let's say it's not at a show where you get their email address. Obviously, then you can write it down yourself and say, I got this person's name and email in LA or in St. Louis or whatever. But if it's on your website and you are only collecting name and email in order to make it fast, how do you then go back and get them to provide geographical information?
Well, there are some tools these days that kind of can supply that for you. They are legal.
Big Brother.
No, they are legal tools. if you're in the marketing world, they're easy to, there's lots of them that do that. I would recommend, if you have the option when making your email form or the little widget that goes on your website or what you're asking for, to ask for the zip code. I always do that at like shows. There's a zip code field. I think that's the one thing, more so than their last name, it's probably more important to have their zip code, just so you can give them information that's relevant to them. But sometimes you may not be able to do that, but that's okay. But if you can, it's encouraged. Cool. All right. Well, let's quickly sum up what we've said here. Email is important. Yes, we all agree. You should be building a list. Yes. It's more important than social in some respects, as far as communicating with your fans. And there's lots of good, simple little action items that you can take to improve your list and your emails. And if you want more detailed information, we've got lots of articles about email on the DIY Musician blog, so check that out. But let's move to some feedback. All right,
well, we got feedback.
Oh, okay, excellent. You know, we should make a little sound clip that is feedback. That, how did we not think of that before?
It's 138 episodes in now.
I know, we finally have a good idea. All right, so we've got some comments on the blog off of a couple episodes. The first one is from Chance Erica Williams. I don't know if that's two people using the same login account or if it's one person named Chance Erica, because Chance and Erica is hyphenated. But anyway, here's their comment. Am I wrong to take away from this that your best way to get the attention of a booker is to know someone they've already booked? And also to be polite, of course. I hate whiny, I'll say jerks, as well. That's what I kind of sounded like, not that that's a bad thing. But so they're saying that they hate, they don't like people whining to them, which Shanta in the email said that a lot, you know, artists, it's just funny when they communicate, a lot of times they just want to treat the person like they're a vending machine. And I want a gig. You're the vending machine. Give me the gig. And they're kicking it. They're toppling it over. You know, they're doing all sorts of things when they don't get the gig. So
instead of simply just saying, I have 50 cents, I can make you money.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's how.
But the point, the comment they said about, is it the best way to get attention of booker to know booker to say they, you know someone they've already booked? Actually, that is a great way to get a gig. That is such a good lead-in to the club booker. It provides them great context. And if they've already booked your friend's band, in their mind they're thinking, hey, they're friends with that band that we booked and had a successful show. Chances are, one, they know what they're doing, and two, that they probably have some cross, you know, draw of fans. And so, yes, that is a good way to get the conversation going. I think when Hello Morning was playing in Portland regularly, I think we've used that a couple times to get a gig.
And also, why not try to talk to that band that you're friends with and say, hey, can we put a bill together and just sort of prepackage it and pitch it to that booker? Because then you're saving them a bunch of work too.
Yeah, and that's other things that we've done as far as getting the attention of a club booker is like exactly that. Getting the band that's been booked there already that you're friends with and putting a bill together. It's a great way to do it. Yeah, I think even all the way back to one of our first episodes with Alicia Rose, who was a club booker here in Portland. She's moved on to other things, but I think she specifically mentioned that. I can't remember, but it rings a bell. Then we've got a comment from Robert Lee King. Robert Lee King is back.
Hey, he's back.
If you haven't been reading the comments, he's back and picking up right where he left off. I think for a while, if you've been a longtime fan of the podcast, I think people thought we were making up Robert Lee King and that he was just one of us in character, but he's very real. And he commented on that episode saying, get over the marketing bull, story means nothing.
Huh.
And he was talking about, you know, having a good story and using that story to get a gig. And, you know, he always falls back to the music is the only thing that matters. And, when you're trying to get somebody to open your email and even get to the music, story matters. So there's no question that you can't sell it any other way. Sure, if you're this band that's already has a fan base and has fans wanting you to come to town, sure, the club booker might contact you. I still don't see that happening. A club booker's never sitting around going, man, I really wish I just had people pitching show ideas to me. I guess I'll have to go find some. So to say that story means nothing is just an inaccurate statement.
I mean, I think, you know, where Robert Lee King comes from sometimes is he's thinking of, you know, these amazing magnetic bands like, you know, the Beatles or, you know, Led Zeppelin or something that had created so much momentum so quickly that they didn't, you know, themselves need to worry about all the sort of marketing minutiae that their music stood on their own.
Yeah, but to say that nobody was doing massive marketing around the Beatles is a gross understatement.
Right. Right.
Yeah, if you want to talk about story, yeah, I know that's he did reference the Beatles in his longer message to somebody else. That was just one of his comments. But yeah, that era is gone and it's not coming back. If there's too many artists that have access to make music and make great music. And so if you want to get bubble up amongst the many, it's crafting a story is what's going to catch people's attention.
I kind of laugh about that because I think even of that era, those artists all were focused on story. I mean, Bob Dylan, he pretended to be like a, you know, train hopping hobo sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
he stepped into a story that was not real in order to get attention. The Beatles, I mean, at least it was maybe more authentic to their own sense of humor and all that, but they were definitely playing that up. They had Brian Epstein worrying about their clothing and whether people thought John Lennon was married, and like, it was super manufactured.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
they just also happened to be geniuses. So,
and there's David Bowie who pretended he was from Mars.
Right.
I think they still haven't verified whether or not he really was from Mars.
From Mars. Okay. Good story either way.
Yeah, good story either way. The last comment I have was from Ron Honeycutt on our last roundtable, where we were talking about the article about image and image doesn't matter, and the artist, that guy created an experiment, put together a band. Basically, I wouldn't call it a fake band, but he said we weren't going to focus on the music at all. As an experiment, we were just going to focus on the image. And in that band said they made one of the top lists of bands in South Florida. And Ron was upset that I made a comment about that being a sarcastic comment about that not being a very hard list to make. Now, he thought I was you know, making fun of bands from Florida. And as a representative of CD Baby, I shouldn't do that. But I clarified on the blog, but if anyone else was feeling the same emotion, I will say I'm sorry. What I was really referring to is how there seems to be all these mysterious top bands from various regions lists all over the place. And I've actually sat in a room where it was at a conference I was at. It was like a small breakout session. There was probably about 30 artists in the room. So it was more of a casual conversation. And somebody on the panel said, I'm the top such and such artist in this region of Canada. And then I think everybody almost in the room had some sort of top artist list that they were on. Most of them were getting it from Reverb Nation, which I haven't heard people using saying that much lately. But that was sort of where I was coming from with that comment, the idea that who's making these lists and why do they matter? And if this, in context of a story, remember, the context of a story was about a band that completely fabricated themselves and made this list. So my point being that these lists are ridiculous. It has nothing to do with artists of what the artist in a various region. It's just, I've seen so many artists focus attention on trying to get on these lists as if they matter, but totally turn their back on actually building relationships with fans that get fans excited to come to their shows. So if you'd like to weigh in and get your comments and thoughts on the podcast, you can do so in many ways. One of them being you could call our listener line 360-524-2209. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can weigh in on the comments section where I pulled most of the comments or all the comments from this episode. Just go to cdbabypodcast.com and you can find the episode you want to weigh in on. And I'm there interacting with folks and answering questions, and it's fun to hear from you. Do we have anything else we need to cover? Anything else? Final thoughts, guys?
Grow your email list. Yeah, make sure you've got a contact form on your website.
Yeah, go grow your email list, and don't ignore your fans on email. So that's all I got.
Cool.
I guess we'll catch you guys next time.
You guess.
See ya. Yeah.
Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.